Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
NATO is transforming from a static alliance focused on the defense of Europe into an expeditionary alliance ready to deploy outside of Europe in the defense of freedom.
What? An expeditionary... What was that, Kathy? Expeditionary... Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for tuning in. It's about 7 past the hour. The headline and the lead is this. While his boozy twins ran rampant and possibly naked through Argentina, W took a break from all the hard work of parenting and visited the NATO summit in Latvia, which was hosted by the Latvian Transatlantic Organization, the Commission of Strategic Analysis, and the German Marshall Fund of the United States, or as Rumskull likes to call them, Old Europe. So you know what that means? Moron sounds on the program tonight. Did you catch any of Bush speaking in Latvia today? New York Times editorial slouching towards Riga, the capital city of Latvia, had this to say today. The real issue before the annual summit meeting is that NATO is failing its most significant post-Soviet test, stabilizing Afghanistan. I thought its most significant post-Soviet test was stopping the genocide in Serbia. That's the way that was sold to the American public. I've said before, I had a lot of problems with that, where it concerned the Clinton administration backing the idea of NATO attacking. NATO was a defensive organization, a military organization, set up to counter a Soviet attack through Germany. Well, you all know that. Anyway, New York Times says that NATO is failing its most significant post-Soviet test, stabilizing Afghanistan. Violence is spiraling as the Taliban and Al-Qaeda reassert their power in that country. The economy is addicted to opium production. The pro-Western government in Kabul looks increasingly powerless and irrelevant. The Times went on to say, in Riga, Bush will urge more troops into Afghanistan from the NATO forces, about 32,000 member NATO forces there now. But as the Times points out, Bush can't do much more than cajole the allies, because Iraq and his idiocy and his ignorance has deprived him of both international credibility and the military forces to do more. I added the part about his idiocy and his ignorance. The Times wouldn't say that if they had a mouthful of it. We'll get to that in a moment. A couple of quick emails here. First from Harold in New York City, a friend of ours who runs a club there. Had one in Lower Manhattan, now has one in Brooklyn. Hi, Mike. That last caller was right about the atrocities committed by GIs in Vietnam. When I was in high school in 71, a group of Viet vets against the war were invited to talk to us. They told stories of atrocities as bad as what that last caller said. blowing women's heads, blowing off women's heads, firing a rocket launcher at people's privates. When asked how they do such things, one of them answered that when you're in the thick of it, you don't have time for heavy thoughts. Their stories have haunted me to this day. Harold. Yeah, well, I maintain the same thing, and I'm sure Harold does too, and I'm sure you do too, even though neither Harold nor I, and possibly not you, have ever been in a combat situation to just gratuitously, if that's the right word, murder people for sport is, I can't believe that that is a component of combat. Maybe it is, huh? And Randy in San Francisco also emailed last night. He writes, I met a guy at the farmer's market a few days ago here in San Francisco. He was selling an electric guitar in a space he set up before the bulls could throw him out. I asked him if he could play any Hendrix, and he sat down and played the Star Spangled Banner a la Jimmy. He was in another world as I spoke to him, maybe high, maybe not. He told me he was in Iraq, and in the course of the conversation told me he had run over a couple of kids while driving a Humvee and just kept going. He was obviously in pain. His eyes betrayed him. I'm scared thinking about what these guys coming back will be going through and the retribution they may feel the society is owed for their pain. Well, again, this whole idea of the disillusionment of people who are forced to fight these kinds of wars can be summed up, I think, in two words, Timothy McVeigh. Well, that was certainly a nice start to tonight's program, huh? The Associated Press is reporting today that a subdivision has withdrawn its threat of $25 daily fines against a homeowner who put a Christmas wreath shaped like a peace sign on the front of her home. This was all over the news today. Homeowner Lisa Jensen told the AP that the board of directors of the Loma Linda Homeowners Association had apologized, called the incident a misunderstanding, and had withdrawn its request for the wreath's removal. You remember this homeowner, Lisa Jensen, was ordered to take the wreath down by the Homeowners Association when some residents in the subdivision saw it as a protest of the Iraq War. We're not going to protest the Iraq War. Not in this subdivision, goddammit! No, no! This is Christmas! There'll be no war protests here in this subdivision. Now, if you want to put something out there that says Jesus loves George Bush... Some saw it as a protest of the Iraq War, and some saw it as a symbol of Satan. How'd you like to live in this subdivision, huh? Can you imagine this? Ms. Jensen, who is a past association president, says she was overwhelmed with hundreds of calls of support and offers to help her pay the $1,000 fine that would have accrued if she had kept up the wreath until after Christmas. She said, quote, we would like to thank everyone who has contacted us with moral support and offers of financial support. We are grateful to hundreds of complete strangers who felt so moved by this story they contacted us. She went on to say, quote, it seems whenever someone tries to say peace on earth, it is met with so much resistance. The incredible amount of support we've received over the last couple of days really is proof to us how many people believe in peace and in our right to say it. Isn't that the truth? You know, these right-wingers will froth at the mouth if Macy's decides to say Happy Holidays. No, no, baby Jesus wants to be Christmas in these department stores. By God, that's how you sell these cashmere sweaters for $79.95. Christmas, Christ, Mass. But when it comes to peace on earth, what is that, communism? Tons of bitches out there. What, you don't respect George Bush? What, you hate America, don't you? You're not supporting the troops. Get that peace symbol down. Footprint of the American chicken. Communism. God, there is that Islam. I don't know. One of them. It's just beyond sick. What is this? A couple of people sent me emails. Limbaugh is calling for the complete annihilation of the Middle East. Bomb everybody. Sorry, fat man. That was a line out of Apocalypse Now in the Marlon Brando character, Colonel out of his Colonel Kurtz, out of his diary that the young captain who was sent to assassinate him found after his death, where he said, you know, bomb them all, kill them all. The problem is the drug-eating, law-breaking pig, Rush Limbaugh, has no right to talk about bombing anything. I mean, he is a rich, ugly, white American who hides and sneaks and goes down the Dominican Republic with one Viagra pill so he can have sex with a 14-year-old boy. And this thug is talking about just blow them all up, huh? One of these days, Limbaugh is going to come into contact with an immovable force, and there's going to be teeth, hair, and eyeballs all over the pavement, don't you think? We'll be back after the break. Newt Gingrich has something to say about freedom of speech. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
A liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. I just can't get over that Christmas wreath story. What makes people do that? React to what is universally recognized now as a peace symbol, even though, as we discussed last night, had to do with nuclear disarmament, which is also, an idea that comes from the devil's mind, you know, get rid of nuclear weapons. But what is it about a peace symbol that makes certain people just fall apart at the seams? Like this Homeowners Association president woman who or man who just freaked. I don't know. Newt Gingrich, he was at a he was in Manchester, New Hampshire the other night at an awards banquet. The awards banquet was attended by about 400 state and local power brokers. They're referred to by the Manchester Union Leader newspaper in New Hampshire. And it was the annual Naki S. Loeb, I'm sure that is someone connected with the Union Leader newspaper, the name sounds familiar, First Amendment Award Dinner, which celebrates people and organizations that stand up for freedom of speech. Okay, so far so good. So when he had his chance to talk, Gingrich stood up at this freedom of speech awards banquet and said, quote, "A different set of rules," end quote, "may be needed in order to reduce terrorists' ability to use the internet and free speech to recruit and get out their message." In other words, he said that our country will be forced to re-examine freedom of speech to meet the threat of terrorism. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. So here in America, we, according to another one of these murderous neocon pigs, this one, Newt Gingrich, who is just absolutely a vile man because he has quite an intellect, Newt Gingrich does. And that's what makes him so unbelievably dangerous. He's very glib. He's very intelligent. He's a coward, and a liar and an adulterer, but he's glib and intelligent. Here he is saying we're going to have to re-examine freedom of speech, re-examine the First Amendment. He says, quote, we need to get ahead of the curve before we actually lose a city, which I think could happen in the next decade. Fear, destroy freedom, destroy liberty, fear, terrorism, destroy freedom, fear, terrorism, destroy freedom. What? There's something I don't can't get my mind around, not to any depth, any degree, probably because I haven't tried. But why don't Democrats say this? Are any of you aware of any Democrat or progressive or liberal or green or just anybody in the political spectrum in the United States other than Republicans suggests that First Amendment rights have to be curtailed or ended altogether, which is what the Bush crime family believes in? First Amendment, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Eighth Amendment are to be done away with. Why do we never hear, or maybe I'm missing it, do you know of any Democrat of reputation like a Newt Gingrich or somebody prominent? I'm not saying somebody respected. Newt Gingrich is just an absolute vile human being. Well, he is. Anyone who walks into his wife's hospital room when she's recovering from cancer surgery and says that and has papers served to her about a divorce, that is a vile, filthy man / human being. It is. It just simply is. Sorry, no equivocation. He's a pig. But why do we never hear of a Democrat saying, we're going to have to kill freedom of speech because those dirty, rotten terrorists are going to blow up one of our cities. And you see, if we kill freedom of speech, then they won't. That's the logic. Now, I said a second ago, he's very glib and very intelligent. I know what you're thinking. Well, how can an intelligent person say that there is a cause and effect? I believe Gingrich probably does believe that anytime he hears a rooster crowing and the sun comes up, Gingrich probably wants to go grab that rooster and say, by God, I found one that makes the sun come up. I mean, what else would explain his rationale? That First Amendment rights guaranteed by the United States Constitution somehow are encouraging terrorists to come and blow up one of our cities. I hate these people. I just despise them.
Hey, neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
We'll get to Bush in Riga, Latvia, a little bit later in the program. A couple of quick emails here. This is from Eric in Miami. Mike, I heard Bush say today that he won't leave Iraq until victory is won. Why is it okay for an imposter and a lunatic to send our troops to die for profit, and the whole country seems unable to stop this madness? There are over 150,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. I would dare say that at least two-thirds of these soldiers have at least one family member alive. All day long I've been asking myself, where are these people? Where are the family members? Any fear that I may feel would have to be put aside while I fight for my loved one. There should be at least 100,000 Cindy Sheehans out there raising hell against this madman called Bush. Where are they? I don't know. I really don't. Somebody just sent me something that Webb, James Webb, who was just elected to the Senate from Virginia. And apparently there was an exchange between Webb and Bush when Bush had some of these people into the White House. And this is at Daily Kos, if you want to check it out. Bush asked Webb, whose son, he has a son who's, I think, a Lance Corporal in the Marine Corps, Jim Webb does, in Iraq. And Bush said, how's your son? And Webb responded by saying, I want to get him out of Iraq. I want to get him home. And Bush said, that's not what I asked you. I asked you, how is he? And according to the source, Webb came very close to slugging the President of the United States, just punching him right in his goddamn face. Bang! Excuse me. I'm sorry. Sorry about the language. But he didn't. He didn't. Webb didn't, obviously, or Webb would be in jail. Isn't there something about Bush that is just, I don't know, just disgusting. I didn't ask you that. Webb responded by saying that he really wanted to see his son brought back home. According to the source, Bush responded, I didn't ask you that. I asked how he's doing. Webb confessed that he was so angered by this that he was tempted to slug the commander-in-chief, reported the source. But, of course, he didn't. You can find it at Daily Kos. Wow. That is the kind of self-restraint that makes me think that Jim Webb is going to probably make a pretty good senator. He's talking about his son. And as Eric writes, the point Eric's trying to make here with why is there only one Cindy Sheehan? I realize her son was murdered by Bush, but Rumsfeld and Cheney. But why is there only one obvious mom out there? I realize there are a lot more. I understand that. Maybe this is a function of the way media perverts and distorts reality. But I think the point Eric is making, our troops are in Iraq now for no reason at all. None. There is absolutely, anybody will tell you, there is nothing that we are going to accomplish there. It's over. It's over. We knew this about Vietnam in 68 or 69, and we lost another 39,000 Americans because of the psychosis of Henry Kissinger and Dick Nixon. You know what Kissinger said? All those soldiers died in Vietnam for America's credibility. Can you believe that? That's almost a direct quote. They died for America's credibility. This Iraq war thing is driving me to distraction, isn't it? Isn't it you? Huh? Dominic, who's listening in Japan, said NATO is deploying troops outside of Europe to promote democracy. So does that mean European troops are headed to Washington to save us? I've had several people send me this story. I've had 30. The Malachi Richard story, I think I'm pronouncing his last name right, Chicago resident who a couple of weeks ago set himself on fire. Excuse me. Actually, it's about a month ago now, back on November 3rd, along the Kennedy Expressway in Chicago. An anti-war protest that this young man thought could not be ignored. He set up a sign saying, thou shalt not kill, and he left a lengthy explanation, a suicide note, I guess you want to call it that, although it's more of a political statement. It's you can find it at Yahoo. And a lot of people writing to me about this are suggesting that the media blackout on this story has generated a whole bunch of blog comments and criticisms. Do you know how long it's been since, I think, 90, was it 94, 95, since someone, as a form of protest in this country, burned themselves to death? I remember in the 60s, 63, 4, 5, it was before we had made a huge commitment to troops in Vietnam, the Buddhist monk. All I remember is the first part of his name in the way we look at the name, T-H-I-C-H. I know I get 30 emails now telling me what his real name, his whole name was, but I remember seeing the pictures on television. Yeah, back in the 60s, you could see someone burning to death on television. And there he sat in front of the Parliament building in Saigon. Is that where? After dousing himself in gasoline, setting himself on fire. But Malachi Ritscher, a peace activist from Chicago, and having lived in Chicago for almost 4 years, I can tell you that the peace and justice community in that city is extensive, whether it is through Catholic organizations or non-religious organizations, secular organizations. There is a powerful peace and justice movement, and rightly so. It's Chicago, after all. Powerful peace and justice movement in Chicago. In his suicide note, Malachi Ritscher wrote that his fellow Americans had become, quote, more concerned with sports on television and ringtones on cell phones than the future of the world, end quote. Now, it's being suggested this guy had mental problems and off and on and off and on and yada yada, and his self-immolation was nothing more than acting out his deepest psychosis, which is the standard procedure that you use to discredit someone in this manner. Suicide bombers in the Middle East who have been trivialized by Western media. Well, they're just going to go get their 70 virgins without thinking that people can make that sort of commitment. But we can't. We don't do that in this country. Oh, Christ. I mean, the only way we'd make that commitment is if we knew we'd get a PlayStation 3 for half price. Then we might make that commitment, right? Those of us who do that sort of thing, not me, not you. I'm not talking about you, truth seeker. But there's a depth of commitment to a political idea that we do not understand in this country. That's why we lost in Vietnam. That's why we're losing in Iraq. That's why we will lose in every single war that George Bush or a Democratic president takes us into. That's why the Israelis are losing where it concerns the Palestinian territories. When you have a population that is as committed as these several that I've just mentioned to not being dominated by an outside force to the extent that they will commit suicide, you cannot defeat that. You can't do it. It is an utter impossibility. Ask the French. Talk to the French about Algeria. I mean, they're example after example after. You cannot do it, especially now. Especially now. With the whole damn planet so utterly polarized politically, religiously, economically. Haves and have-nots, emerging countries, sinking countries, failed states, states riding high on the hog. You cannot defeat that kind of dedication. It cannot be done. I defy you to cite me an example in modern history where it has been defeated. And there is this idiot, George W. Bush, in Latvia today talking about he is not going to pull U.S. troops until the mission is complete. He is not going to do it. What is the mission? Does anybody know? Anybody. I don't care if you're a Jew, Gentile, gay, straight, left, right, up, down, man, woman. I couldn't care less. What is our mission in Iraq? Anybody want to take a shot at that? No, never mind. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. The thing that I find astonishing about, and we'll have the sound for you right after the break here at the top of the hour, of Bush today in Riga, Latvia. Bush insisting that NATO continue to violate its charter, unless I have this all wrong, that the entire function of NATO was a defense mechanism that would be triggered if the response would be triggered if any of the so-called Warsaw Pact nations back during the battle days of the Cold War were to cross out of the Soviet Union, tank divisions start moving across the what is the huge valley in Germany and Poland and making a move, then NATO would respond. And now NATO is being used in Afghanistan, even as we talk, to do what? I'm not sure. I really am not sure, because whatever NATO is doing, 32,000 troops in Afghanistan is insane. If you want to pacify Afghanistan, I guess it's going to take 2 or 3 million troops, and then they're going to have to stay there forever. You know, Afghanistan has been defeating Western invaders for what, 400 years, 500 years, 400 years, that I'm fairly certain of. And yet Bush is demanding in Latvia that NATO increase, you know, send more of your European boys to go die in some godforsaken country made out of stone and opium poppies. In the meantime, Afghanistan is becoming like Iraq, a completely failed state by Bush standards or Western standards. I guess it is reverting to tribalism, which is the way apparently they want to live. They want to be able to beat their women and torture their little girls and smoke or export lots of opium. There is one little island of kind of like the green zone in Baghdad in Afghanistan. It's called Kabul, where our puppet there, a former Unocal oil consultant, now reigns as the president. Meanwhile, the Taliban is growing in numbers from its bases in Pakistan. Pakistan is another state that's heading for utter and absolute chaos. All of this, thanks to the Bush crime family. The possibility of three so-called, let's call them civil wars, for lack of a better term, Iraq, the Palestinian territories and Lebanon, all happening at once, and this ferocious fight between Sunnis and Shia that has been kicked up now, thanks to the Bush crime family, and the possibility that one of these countries, Israel or Pakistan, will feel compelled to use a nuclear weapon. When we have desperately, desperately needed peacemakers. You know, Jesus talked about blessed are the peacemakers, didn't he? Well, you know, if you want to believe that. Blessed are the peacemakers. When we desperately needed peacemakers, what have we got? We've got Bush and Cheney and Putin. Putin, who has people assassinated. It doesn't make any difference. This guy that was murdered in London, a British citizen. Former Russian who escaped, got the hell out of Dodge, became a citizen of England, of Great Britain, UK, whatever, and was murdered by Putin. Come on. Of course he was murdered by Putin. All of these assassinations of journalists and people who dare to criticize Putin are murdered by Putin. And Putin, of course, is the one that Bush said he looked into his eyes and saw his soul, and he's a good man. Bush only wishes that he could be so brassy as to order the assassination of an individual. No, Cheney takes care of that. Bush tries to order the murder of entire nations, but you know the old phrase that I'm going to mess up again: one death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic, or 1,000 deaths, or 500. But there he is in Latvia talking about he is not going to pull out U.S. troops from Iraq until the mission is complete. And the Associated Press presents it this way: the stakes in Iraq are huge for Bush. What the hell does that mean? Bush doesn't have a dog in that fight. He doesn't give a damn. He has nothing there. It's the soldiers, the Americans who are over there being cut to pieces and doing the cutting. The stakes for Bush are huge? How about the stakes for the families whose sons and daughters and fathers and dear God, mothers and brothers and nephews are over there for what? Again, I ask anyone, I don't care who you are. I'll even declare a temporary amnesty for you right-wing pigs to call in and tell me why we have soldiers in Iraq. Never mind, I don't want to hear from you people. It just upset me. But if any normal people want to call in with an idea of what it is that Bush means when he says until the mission is complete, what is the mission? Does anybody know? Bring it on. What's the mission? Bush declared in his speech, there's one thing I'm not going to do. I'm not going to pull our troops off the battlefield before the mission is complete. You cowardly son of a bitch. Where were you when the mission wasn't complete? Where were you? You were in Vietnam last week, weren't you? Huh? I'm not going to pull anybody out of there until the mission's complete. All right, we got to take a break here. When we come back, Chuckle Nuts talking at Latvia University in Riga, Latvia. Huh? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. The phone number here, by the way, is 800-989-1480. All right. Let's get to the bizarre, surreal, otherworldly, preternatural part of the program. George W. Bush addressing members of the NATO alliance at Latvia University in Riga, Latvia. I watched some of this today, and I can't believe that Bush is this delusional. I mean, I do believe it, but I can't believe his handlers allow him once again to stand on a world stage and make statements that are patently untrue, grossly distorted, and can only come from the mind of someone suffering delusions of a magnitude that requires mega death to satisfy. But there he was. Here's a comment from his general opening remarks before he gets into the real blood and gore part of the speech, where he explains why he's determined to continue the bloody madness in Iraq. You gotta love this when Bush explains why NATO was formed to members of the NATO summit. But somebody, please tell me, what is an expedentiary alliance?
When NATO was formed in 1949,
Its principal mission was to protect Europe from a Soviet tank invasion. Today, the Soviet threat is gone. And under the able leadership of the Secretary General, NATO is transforming from a static alliance focused on the defense of Europe into an expeditionary alliance ready to deploy outside of Europe in the defense of freedom.
Oh, God.
This is a vital mission.
Yeah, aren't they all? Too bad you can never define the vital mission you sent our troops to kill and die for in Iraq. Expeditionary? Could he mean expeditionary? Even that doesn't make any sense. So there he stands in Latvia, one of the nations apparently he bribed into sending 20 or 25 soldiers to Iraq, part of the vast multinational coalition of the willing that Rumsfeld boasted about. There he stands addressing these NATO foreign ministers, telling them why NATO was formed. My God. So in this one, it sounds like he's detailing the payback NATO nations are to receive for helping Bush get with the killing and dying in Afghanistan and Iraq. You know, what's in it for the NATO boys and girls? Well, in this one, it sounds like he's offering, well, here's what you get in return. And I wonder if this massive defense buildup of Eastern Europe that Raisin Brain describes is supposed to be some kind of warning to Putin. You think? Lest he Putin get any ideas about seriously trying to put together what they call it now, the Russian Federation. Isn't that just different way of saying Soviet Union? See if you can make sense out of this.
At this summit, we will launch a NATO Special Operations Forces initiative.
Oh.
That will strengthen the ability of special operations personnel from NATO nations to work together on the battlefield.
Oh.
We will announce a new strategic airlift initiative that will ensure that participating NATO members have a dedicated fleet of C-17 aircraft at their disposal.
What's that, George?
We will launch a new NATO training cooperation initiative that will allow military forces in the Middle East to receive NATO training in counterterrorism and counterproliferation and peace support operations.
What?
And as we take these steps, every NATO nation must make the defensive investments necessary to give NATO the capabilities it needs so that our alliance is ready for any challenge that may emerge in the decades to come.
Listen to the blood dripping off this bastard's fangs. And in the background, just a whole cadre of these murderous thugs. Why is nobody talking about peace? He loves to say words like battlefield. Have you ever noticed that? As long as he doesn't have to go near one. Unless it's surrounded by 7,000 troops and 46 fighter jets and two naval battle groups standing offshore. At this summit, we will launch a NATO Special Operations Forces initiative. Yeah. Work together on the battlefield because, you know, We all speak different talk, words, language. A new strategic airlift initiative that will ensure that NATO has a dedicated fleet of C-17 aircraft. Woo! A new NATO training cooperation initiative that will allow military forces in the Middle East to receive NATO training in counterterrorism and counterproliferation. What? Who are they going to train in the Middle East? Middle East is code word for Israeli, Palestinian, Hezbollah, Hamas, right? So who are we going to train? We're going to train the Israelis? We're going to train the Israelis in counterterrorism and counterproliferation? Oh yeah, that'll happen. The Israelis have been training NATO troops for 40 years. So who does that leave? If we take the Israelis out of the equation, what does he mean? NATO training cooperation initiative that will allow military forces in the Middle East to receive NATO training in counterterrorism and counterproliferation. Hamas? They're going to train Hamas? The Palestinians? Who are they going to train? They're going to train the Israelis? I bet the Israeli military command heard that today and just went, oh, Jesus, can you believe this guy? And he says, and as we take these steps, every NATO nation must make the defensive, and then he paused, must make the defensive investments. Defensive investments. What defense? You're talking about strategic airlift initiative. You're talking about NATO training cooperation initiative. And then you say defensive. What the hell are you talking about? These are not special operation forces initiative. Then he turns around and says, we must make the defense, the NATO nations must make the defensive investments necessary. This is not defense, chuckle nuts. Even your speechwriter screwed that one up. These are offensive investments. Anybody talking about peace over there? Nah, come on, it's Christmas. Peace? That's Satan talking. Peace? Just so there's no confusion about why this moron stopped in Latvia to praise NATO before heading to Jordan to meet with Maliki of Iraq. Got that? He's thanking them for doing his dirty work in Afghanistan. Listen to how Bush has already turned NATO into his personal security force. Well, Blackwater can't be everywhere, right?
The Taliban radicals who are trying to pull down Afghanistan's democracy and regain power.
Democracy?
Saw the transfer from American to NATO control democracy? As a window of opportunity to test the will of the alliance.
A window of opportunity.
Together with the Afghan National Army, NATO forces from Canada and Denmark and the Netherlands and Britain and Australia and the United States engaged the enemy with operational support from Romanian, Portuguese, and Estonian forces.
Ooh.
According to NATO commanders, Allied forces fought bravely and inflicted grave damage on the Taliban. General David Richards, the British commander of NATO troops in Afghanistan, puts it this way.
Okay.
There were doubts about NATO and our ability to conduct demanding security operations. There are no questions about our ability now. We've killed many hundreds of Taliban, and it has removed any doubt in anybody's mind that NATO can do what we were sent here to do.
Oh, my God. Listen to this little tin soldier. Well, let's see. According to the New York Times, and they would know, right? Canadian, Dutch, British, and American forces in southern Afghanistan are doing most of the heavy fighting. The French, Germans, and Italians patrol the relatively quiet northern regions. Now, operational support from Romania? Portugal? Estonia? Estonia? What do they have? Six people there, two of whom are cooks? Operational support from...
Together with the Afghan National Army.
The Afghan National Army. Now, that's controlled by the Taliban, you freak.
Together with the Afghan National Army, NATO forces from Canada and Denmark and the Netherlands and Britain and Australia and the United States engaged the enemy. Oh, my God, there was tactical this and strategic that and battlefield. Oh, I love saying these words. I'm just like Winston Churchill, you know.
And allies, you see his enemies. Spidey freaking dangerous, mad cowboy disease. Mad cowboy disease, mad cowboy disease. Mad cowboy disease. Please put them all in packs and throw away the keys.
You know, it'll take time to restore chaos and order, but we will.
Oh. 22 past the hour. I'm getting a lot of emails tonight from countries other than the United States. Very interesting. Japan, UK, Canada. Let me share this one with you from Montreal, Quebec, from Francis. The Canadian's perspective on the, quote, mission, close quote, in Iraq. Hello, Mike. The occupation of Iraq to me seems like a culmination of all the wars the U.S. has fought in, with the exceptions of World Wars I and II. It was begun, the Iraq War, the occupation was begun on ludicrous reasons, which in reality were economic reasons, like Lincoln did for the Civil War. Like Vietnam, there is no definition of victory. So in the minds of hawks, the war must continue or else it is considered defeat. Let me digress from the email. That's a very good point. That's a very good point. If there is no definition, when Bush talks about victory, and again, I'm not trying to be facile, but what the hell is the victory in Iraq at this point? We have overthrown their leader and sentenced him to death. The country is in, it's not a civil war, it's beyond that. It's anarchy, utter chaos, anarchy, destruction. What we are watching in Iraq is how a failed state, and that is a icy term, how a failed state becomes a failed state. We're watching it. This descent into utter and complete chaos. So what is the victory that Bush is looking for? Back to the email. There is no definition of victory, so in the minds of hawks, the war must continue or else it is considered defeat. Also like Vietnam, it's also the pride of Americans at stake. How the mightiest power in the world is unable to defeat the most backward. And last but not least, like Vietnam, there are too many people with a hand in the mass profits of war. Capitalism in its extreme, for people killing other people so they can get a second Mercedes in their garage. The only difference I can think of with Iraq is this administration's total contempt of the public voice. Administrative arrogance has never been so obvious until now. It simply shows that they're not trying anymore. Tempted as I am to sing out the Republicans in this field, remember, Kennedy and Johnson were Democrats and Vietnam started on their watch. Slight correction. Vietnam started on Eisenhower's watch. Back to the email. Regrettably, there is a second mission disgustingly similar in Afghanistan. This one is my home country of Canada. With Bush wannabe Prime Minister Harper having committed Canadian troops in Afghanistan until 2009 at the earliest, and of course with no definable mission, does this look familiar? Well, if there's one positive thing that can be said about this, it is now more than ever the Canadians and Americans are in the same boat. Both have good people committed to a criminal occupation, and both need to be stopped as soon as possible. Sorry for ranting, Mike. The subject simply makes my blood boil. No apology necessary. But as far as Vietnam, I don't want to put a fine point on it, but Eisenhower was the first one to commit troops after the French defeat at Dien Bien Phu in 1954. Okay, back to Chuckle Nuts in Latvia. You can file this one under either A, delusional split from reality, or B, unintended irony, or both. Of course, irony has murdered in this country. When the U.S. Supreme Court, by a vote of 5-4, handed the presidency to George W. Bush on December 8th, 1999, that was 2000, that was the day irony ended. Here, Manor Monkey talks about how wonderful it is living in Afghanistan today. Holy Christ!
Every ally can take pride in the transformation that NATO is making possible for the people of Afghanistan. The Afghan economy has tripled in size over the past 5 years.
That's opium, you freak!
About 2 million girls are now in school.
Oh, sure there are!
A nation that was once a terrorist sanctuary has been transformed into an ally in the war on terror, led by a brave president, Hamid Karzai.
Karzai.
Our work in Afghanistan is bringing freedom to the Afghan people. It is bringing security to the Euro-Atlantic community. And is bringing pride to the NATO alliance.
Oh, my God. All right, more on this when we come back. Stay with us.
I understand that the unrest in the Middle East creates unrest throughout the region.
Twenty-six before the hour. I want to play that last clip again because we kind of ran into music and time constraints and everything. Again, this is either an example of a total split from reality. This is Red Queen stuff. This is so far through the looking glass as to render it almost fictional. But there he is in Latvia saying this nonsense. Or forget B. I said unintended irony. Oh no. But. Listen to Man or Monkey talking about how wonderful it is living in Afghanistan today.
Every ally can take pride in the transformation that NATO is making possible for the people of Afghanistan. The Afghan economy has tripled in size over the past 5 years. About 2 million girls are now in school. A nation that was once a terrorist sanctuary has been transformed into an ally in the war on terror.
Oh, my God.
Led by a brave president, Hamid Karzai. Our work in Afghanistan is bringing freedom to the Afghan people. It is bringing security to the Euro-Atlantic community and is bringing pride to the NATO alliance.
I don't know where to begin with that. This man is mad. This man is mad. He is clinically, certifiably insane. The Afghan economy has tripled in size over the past 5 years. Has no one told this ignorant fool that the Afghan economy runs almost exclusively on opium? My God, you could read that in Time magazine. And 2 million girls are now in school? He's out of his mind. He's out of his mind. Where does that statistic come from? It comes from nowhere. It comes out of the air. Whoever wrote the speech for him. A nation that was once a terrorist sanctuary has been transformed into an ally in the war on terror? What is he talking about? We are bombing the hell. He's standing there talking about NATO forces. What are the NATO forces bombing if not terrorist camps? In Afghanistan, led by brave President Hamid Karzai. Oh, my God. Yeah. Brave. Our work in Afghanistan is bringing freedom to the Afghan people. No, it's not. It is bringing death and destruction to the Afghan people. It is killing them, murdering them. It is the result of our presence there. Of these Taliban bastards now are dragging school teachers, female school teachers, out into the streets and beating them bloody. It's bringing security to the Euro-Atlantic community. What the hell is the Euro-Atlantic community? And it's bringing pride to the NATO alliance? Okay. Finally, near the end of this... Or Bush's NATO love fest. He gets to the crux of the matter and explains why he's not going to leave Iraq. I'd say when you listen to this, what he's saying is he's going to stay the course, but of course that's not what he says anymore, right?
Tomorrow I'm going to travel to Jordan, where I will meet with the Prime Minister of Iraq.
That's interesting.
We will discuss the situation on the ground in this country.
It's murderous, George.
Our ongoing efforts to transfer more responsibility to the Iraqi security forces.
They don't exist.
And the responsibility of other nations in the region to support the security and stability of Iraq.
Iran?
We'll continue to be flexible. And we'll make the changes necessary to succeed. But there's one thing I'm not going to do.
You arrogant.
I'm not going to pull our troops off the battlefield before the mission is complete.
I thought you said mission accomplished 3 years ago!
And the other thing I'm going to do is to define the mission. Nope, never going to do that. That's why I can keep the troops there for decades to come, or at least until that multi-billion dollar U.S. embassy or Ministry of Oil, whatever you want to call it, is finished, huh? There's one thing I'm not going to do. I'm not going to pull our troops off the battlefield before the mission is complete. What is the mission? What is the mission? What is the mission? You're going to travel to Jordan where you'll meet with the Prime Minister of Iraq. Why don't you go to Iraq? Why don't you land at the airport in Baghdad and drive into the city, George? Why don't you do that? Why don't you meet with the President of Iraq in the Iraqi Parliament building, such as it is? Why don't you do that? You're going to discuss the situation on the ground in his country. Be careful you don't slip and slide if you're in Iraq, because the blood is ankle deep. And some of it is American blood, George. Oh, my God. Okay, no speech of Bush's is complete without some hate-mongering against Islam. Rove wrote him a shiny new catchphrase. Here it is. Violent Islamic radicalism. No wonder his Me Hate Your Long Time tour of Indonesia was such a miserable failure. Somebody should show Bush the last election results and let him know that fear doesn't sell here anymore. He can stop with the nuclear mushroom cloud imagery already. Newt Gingrich is already into that. Violent Islamic radicalism.
The war on terror that we fight today is more than a military conflict. It is a decisive ideological struggle of the 21st century.
Oh, my God.
And in this struggle, we can accept nothing less than victory for our children and our grandchildren. Each strain of violent Islamic radicalism will be emboldened in its efforts to gain control of states and establish new safe havens. The extremists would use oil resources to fuel their radical agenda and to punish industrialized nations and pursue weapons of mass destruction. Armed with nuclear weapons, they could blackmail the free world, spread their ideologies of hate, and raise a mortal threat to Europe, America, and the entire civilized world.
Oh, my God. Rhetorical excess? Oh, maybe. What did you leave out?
Violent radical Islamic radicalism. Oil resources to fuel their radical agenda. Punish industrialized nations, pursue weapons of mass destruction, armed with nuclear weapons, blackmail the free world, spread their ideologies of hate, raise a mortal threat to Europe, America, and the entire civilized world. Holy God in heaven! In four sentences, this guy has brought into play every single possible annihilating fear known to man. Woman, child, beast, plant, mountain.
So in order to offset that, you see, we need to stay in Iraq, and we need to send more NATO troops to Afghanistan. There you go. Sounds like the plot of a third-rate James Bond film, doesn't it? My God, the entire world. The world is at risk. Our children and grandchildren will be nuked if we don't let Bush keep killing Muslims and taking their oil. Oh, Jesus, where do I enlist? Where do I sign up to join the armies of God? Somebody? But his statement, this poor, miserable ex-Nazi pope, this former SS Nazi is in Turkey talking with another one of those guys in the long white robes and the funny hats. And yes, I will always make fun of that kind of utter nonsensical dress and pageantry. They look like freaks. But there they sit, the Grand Mufti or whatever the hell he is in Turkey. They want to join NATO. Or no, they want to, I guess, they're in NATO. They want to join the European Union. We're Europeans! You are?
But there sits the Pope, and there sits the Grand Mufti, and then they're talking around each other. The Pope's getting his zingers in, and the Grand Mufti is getting his zingers in, or who? And you know, religion should not be about killing. Religion has always been about killing. Religion should be about peace and love. Jesus Christ, you can't even put up a peace sign in a suburb in Colorado. Don't talk to me about that, Mr. Pope, Mr. Mufti. You people aren't here about peace. You're about dominance and war and savagery and your twisted perverted beliefs in life after death. So while the Grand Mufti and the Pope are trying to slug it out, this little shadow dance that they're doing in Turkey, Bush says,
"The war we fight today is more than a military conflict. It is the decisive ideological struggle of the 21st century."
My God, and the 21st century is only 6 years old. Jesus, George, you have a crystal ball. This is the decisive ideological struggle. Your little filthy, disgusting, murderous annihilation of Iraq? That is the decisive ideological struggle. The terrorists he's talking about, he created. If you want to avenge what happened in this country on September 11, 2001, George, bomb Saudi Arabia! That's where they came from, you moron!
The entire world is at risk.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, in my inimitable way, I have mentioned tonight how much I hate these people. Joe emails, "Hi Mike, listen to your show. This, that feeling of can this really be happening in response to the staged antics of the Bush administration is one I haven't been able to shake for a long time now, and I have a feeling most sensate Americans know the feeling. It's like the feeling you get sometimes when you're asleep and your breath catches, and part of you needs to wake up a bit more to get the body gasping for air." Yeah, I've had that feeling. It seems almost as if we're all frozen in a helpless trance state, resigned to only being able to watch the horror unfold. I place a large share of the blame on the complacent media. How long until someone has the sense to just scream stop? Joe. We're just getting off a lot of good emails tonight. Just a couple more here. This is from Claudia in Kentucky. "Mike, I'm listening to your rhetorical question about what our mission in Iraq is, and it brought back my heart-wrenching conversation I just had with my 26-year-old 3 nights ago. He's in the Air Force and scheduled to deploy end of January. We've been round and round over this obscene war, and all I can really tell from my son's perspective is that he has been so brainwashed by the military machine that he no longer allows himself to contemplate new, conflicting information. In his world, a soldier/pilot answers the call of superiors without question. It's what he trained for and why he became an Air Force navigator in the first place. To do otherwise would seem to have been a waste of his training and time. I've come to feel guilty for even trying to talk sense to him because a part of me fears a crack in his resolve and certainly could somehow end up getting him killed. My younger son, a wise kid at 21, believes his older brother is just going to have to learn the hard way what we are not able to convince him of, that not all wars are necessary or legal. Have I told you how much I hate these people who put our children in harm's way for profit and historical glory? I'm in the streets every chance I get because I feel so utterly powerless to undo what military training and Congress have done, getting our country into a war they refuse to get us out of." I don't know how anyone with a family member in Bush's military, I don't know how you hold on to your sense of balance. I really don't. This is from CD. Mike, I want to bring to your attention an article in the Associated Press today. A judge that struck down Bush's attempt to designate any group that he sees fit as a terrorist organization. This would have allowed the government to blacklist them, seize their assets, among other things. The judge said it was unconstitutional and vague. The lawyers referred to it as reminiscent of the McCarthy era. So there's actually some hope in reining this delusional, egotistical bastard in. If there was any real justice in this world, Bush and company would be on trial for war crimes. There's nothing more heinous or criminal a president can do than to lie his way into a war and to compound that lie by continuing to lie about its progress. The blood of over 500,000 Iraqis and thousands of Americans are on his hands. People must be held accountable. And then this last one, this is from one of the people that posted to the Molloy board. Hey, Mike, I have a thought for you. How many civilian deaths have we caused in Iraq now? I'm not good with numbers, but the latest conservative counts are over 600,000, right? 600,000 dead brothers, sisters, fathers, wives, sons, and daughters. We break into their houses in the night, screaming at them in a foreign tongue just before we shoot them. We bomb their schools and churches and then claim it was a mistake. We drop irradiated bombs on them, poisoning them for generations, and we still haven't even admitted to the world why we're there. But we all know that, at least those of us who are paying attention. Let's imagine for just a moment that there really are terrorists out there with the goal of making America pay for its crimes. Fundamentalist religious zealots who would be quite aware of the nature of this religious crusade America is engaging in. Just how many fundamentalist megachurches here in the United States would those terrorists need to bomb with their congregations inside to equal the destruction of human life we have caused them? What's the size of those congregations anyway? 5,000? 10,000? It's no secret that they are largely behind our war impulse, those who are trying to advance the end of days. In some moral systems, some fairly popular ones at that, justice demands an eye for an eye. I'll bet 100 terrorists, quote, quote, could do the operation without breaking a sweat, and they wouldn't even have to commit suicide to make it happen. And I'll bet they could do it with common substances purchased at Walmart. Without any real border security, it's no great stretch of the imagination to think that there could be 100 foreign operatives scattered across the U.S. in position for such a strike. In fact, it's kind of ridiculous to believe that there aren't foreign operatives in our country. Well, this attack hasn't happened. It seems like the simplest plan in the world. But there have been no such attacks. Not because Bush is doing such a good job. He was still passing out student visas from Saudi Arabia like candy last time I checked, and inspiring hatred from countries across the globe. I'm not totally sure why it hasn't happened, but it seems self-evident that it wouldn't be that hard to do. And the scariest part of this sobering thought is this. Under any moral philosophy, the Iraqis have every right in the world to attack us like that. I am in no way advocating violence against anyone with this email. I'm a pacifist. But if my imagination can come up with something like that, surely the, quote, terrorists, close quote, can too. Jim Geek Aus. That's his handle at my website. It's one thing to be lied into a war, but it's something else again to hear the person who lied us into the war speaking in terms that are so far outside the realm of normalcy as to just scare the hell out of those of us who still live inside that world where things have cause and effect and normalcy and up is up and down is down and you win some, you lose some, and Tuesday follows Monday, and, you know, stuff like that. And to understand that the people who are setting policy for this country that will have untold ripple effect are mad is just a little bit difficult to handle, isn't it? Stay with us. After the break, we'll return your phone calls. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Okay, we're going to take phone calls this hour. So you want to get online, 800-989-1480 is the number. We'll be coming to RB in a second and John. And we have three open lines. So now's the time to do it. All right. One last email here from Alex in New York City about what the mission is. Alex writes, the total destruction of the U.S. economy on the way to becoming emperor of the world through coercion, blackmail, and death squads worldwide with the liquidation of the Congress and the elimination of the Supreme Court. This is his mission as revenge for the U.S. population trying to take back our country from his thugs. Well, I truly wonder sometimes if we're going to let it happen. And during the break, I'm looking at the replay over and 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 over again today on CNN of the Pope in is he in Ankara or wherever the hell he is in Turkey? And these massed clots and crowds of screaming Muslims and change the channel. You see mass clouds of clots of screaming Christians. Man, when are we going to hit a tipping point where, the referee can't say, okay, time, everybody into their respective corners. Time. When you know, that's the part that's really scary to me. With the kind of rhetoric that is ricocheting around the planet, whether it comes from a freak like Michael Richards or the Pope, the ex-Nazi, or a psychopath like Bush or someone who believes in personal assassination like Putin or a megalomaniac freak like Rumsfeld at what point will the right combination of syllables or the wrong come out of somebody's mouth that triggers just an unstoppable avalanche of fury and destruction? That's the part that really, really has me frightened. All right, let's go to your phone calls. RB is calling from Saskatoon, Canada. RB, welcome to the program.
Good day, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Yeah.
Hey, Bush's speech today, remember? He won't use the word civil war, right? And he's trying to say that the sectarian violence that there is, of course, in Iraq, he said, is being fomented by al-Qaeda, and that's the problem. And did you hear that the Ayatollah Khomeini of Iran has said that the U.S. is hiring terrorists to destabilize Iraq? You know, and that was just, that was crawled along the bottom of CNN, just in a little blurb there. So the American people aren't really getting the whole story about a year ago, British SAS troops dressed up in Arab gear started firing upon Iraqi policemen, and they were subdued and sent to this prison. That night, British soldiers, the British Army broke into that prison, killing people, and got those SAS special agents out of there.
I remember the story, yeah.
It was a one-day thing, and nothing, of course, ever came of it. It seems to me that the mission in Iraq is no mission at all. The mission is to make it possible to keep military bases, permanent military bases there, to keep it possible that the Americans, with their giant embassy they're building that you can see from space, to be the power brokers in the region, Iraq is there to be the base to launch future wars against Iran and anybody else who doesn't, fit into the globalists' plans. This is all covered in the Project for New American Century. Everything's going according to plan. That is what is going on.
Yeah, and as far as what this religious freak in Iran, and I say that because I hate religious leaders. I don't care who they are. But Khamenei, or whatever his name is, his statement is a true statement nonetheless. It doesn't make any difference, my disrespect for him, because he's a religious leader. But his statement about Americans fomenting terrorism, he knows Iran was involved in Iran-Contra with Pappy Bush and Reagan and Oliver North and the rest of these murderous bastards. So he understands. Negroponte went to Central America as into Honduras and El Salvador and Guatemala and helped in organizing death squads. Negroponte went to Iraq right before
These death squads started operating there with just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people being beheaded and murdered and butchered. So Khamenei, whether I respect him or not, speaks the truth. We are fomenting. There is no doubt in my mind that American and British and God knows what other, maybe Israeli, secret service or commando units or whatever have financed, funded, organized, trained, and disciplined these terrorist organizations that are slaughtering people by the hundreds. It's astonishing to me what is going on. What the hell happened 6 years ago? Yes. RB, there was trouble in between Israel and Palestine. Yes, there was a half-witted dictator in Iraq. Yes. But this insanity had not been unleashed. And here comes Bush and opens the gates.
Well, it may not have been unleashed, but it was being planned to be unleashed. And the blueprints are right before everybody. And all it would take is, somebody else besides just Seymour Hersh or somebody else besides just Greg Palast to actually start talking about these things openly and honestly, because the American people not being told the truth. They're sleepwalking into disaster. That this is worse than Vietnam could ever be, because there is a deficit. With Vietnam, you could just quit and leave, but in this situation, if you just quit and leave now, they really have made sure that if they do quit and leave, that what mess they leave behind, they'll be able to come back and have an excuse to clean up later. They've got both ends covered, I think. And I really do believe that the mission, as it's so called, is to start a war without a multi-generational, generational war, like Al Gore Vidal said. Perpetual war will create perpetual profit. Look at the money the arms manufacturers are making hand over fist out of this deal. And look at the other situations where you can use when you can use wars and violence and stuff like that to hide behind taking away people's rights at home. And that just fits right into what Newt Gingrich was saying. So they need all this. They need this chaos and this uncertainty and keeping the people living in fear, or else their ultimate plan of the New World Order, as Mr. Bush Sr. himself declared, is going to come forward, whether we like it or not, because that's what they've got planned. And unless somebody has the courage, besides just a few intrepid reporters, but this has got to get into the mainstream. You've got to have, instead of the Daily Show and the Colbert Report making true but funny comments about stuff, they need to one day bring Seymour Hersh on, or bring on Greg Palast. You never see them on these liberal left-wing gatekeeper shows. And it's really bothering me. I mean, I allowed myself to hope for a few days when the Democrats took care of Congress, but that hope quickly died when I saw Jane Harman just now being declared. Jane Harman is all for this war on Islam. So I don't know. This is looking bad.
Yeah, it is. All right. RB, thanks for checking in.
All right.
We'll talk again. Take care. John is calling from Oakland. Hey, John.
Yeah, Mike, I agree with everything the last caller said, especially about the fake left liberal gatekeepers who criticize this dirty slaughter, this design for world domination that this Bush gangsters actually wrote about in their Project for an American Century, even before they got into office, saying that they had planned to invade Afghanistan and Iraq and any country that they saw as an obstacle to their mad designs, their Hitlerian designs for world domination, any country. And, I think that what the previous caller mentioned about something that is really downplayed in the news, if it ever slips through on the crawl. Yes, Iran.
John, I need you to hold on. We got to take a break. We'll come back after the break. All right.
Right.
We're talking with John in Oakland. Again, we have three open lines here. We can always put on a tape program if you all don't want to call in. This is Talk Radio. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Weapons down. I am the con man. They are the
21 past the hour. We're talking with John in Oakland. All right, John, go ahead.
I just wanted to agree with the last caller. The corporate media and Bush are not the only culprits in lying us into this war and keeping us keeping its nature obscured. It's the Democrats and I think some of the fake left liberal types as well who act as gatekeepers against getting out of Iraq immediately. As I've read on commondreams.org, Michael Moore has called for immediate withdrawal. William Blum, the former top State Department official, has said the Democrats are just going to try to string us along like the Democrats and Republicans did for 10 years in Vietnam and killing 3 million lives. But I think we've got to realize that we've got to get other sources of information. I think one of the biggest crimes is my conviction that there was complicity by the elements of the Bush administration, these neocon gangsters in the 9/11 attacks, and 9/11truth.org is one good site because there's almost like a kind of a rabid goalie obsession by some of the fake liberals to not get into that and to try to hit anyone who does bring out the massive evidence that's been growing that there was complicity in those attacks to justify these perpetual wars that you mentioned and these attacks on our civil liberties. It's just it's obvious, but previous caller was talking about the head of Iran talking about the United States is financing some of these al-Qaeda terrorists in Iraq. That has been complete downplayed by the media. You mentioned that. You just saw that quickly on the crawl. Now there's just this bland thing that he's blaming the U.S., even Air America, just on the news at the top of the hour, was just completely avoiding that and just parroting all of Bush's nonsense and rhetorical projections of his own evil schemes, the schemes he has for world domination, onto these mythical boogeymen in Afghanistan and around the world. So I think, we've really got to realize that not only does this government have to be held accountable, but the Democrats and especially the media, because I think they are actually even more effective in dragging us into these kinds of slaughters and wars than Bush himself. And they should be held literally accountable. I was reading an article by Jeff Cohen of Fair.org,
right,
and he brings up just one of the many examples, this Glenn Beck on CNN, you know, the most trusted.
Oh, another psychopath.
Yeah, and he's got, he holds sway on a massive platform every night for 2 hours and then repeated 2 hours. He's an absolute fascist, a murderous inciter to war and attack against Iran and Islam and the rest of it in the world. And he is at one point called for Michael Moore. He wished that Michael Moore and Congressman Dennis Kucinich would be violently killed. He called Cindy Sheehan a big prostitute.
He's John, I have to leave it there. Listen, thanks, but let me move on because I got more people holding on. We'll talk again, all right? All right, John, thanks. Yeah, we could go on and on here, and of course we do go on and on. Yeah, Glenn Beck, don't even get me started on that. One more email, then back to your calls. This is from Chris in New York. Mike, I believe in that thing called the collective unconscious. Though you wouldn't know it from the news media, I think many of us carry the weight of the vile crimes against humanity perpetrated by the U.S. government against the people of Iraq, Afghanistan, and Lebanon. Just seeing the little bits we are allowed to see of the killing and maiming, the destruction of families and their loved ones, who in reality are no different from us, is enough to make events like Malachi Richards' self-immolation come to the surface. I believe the longer the situation goes on, the more of this kind of thing we will see. He, Malachi Richards, was a brave and rare soul and must have deeply felt the pain all those who are being crushed by the American war machine feel every day. Chris in New York. The thing that I think about probably every day, no exaggeration, and maybe I only think about it because of the business I'm in, and that is how can one man George W. Bush and the cloud of killers that operate him take the whole world into this madness.
Mike Malloy Show, you are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Twenty-six before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Mary is calling from Connecticut, West Haven, Connecticut. Hey, Mary. Rocky Mountain, Mary. How you doing?
You got it. How are you, Mike?
I'm
so
doing
good
fine.
To hear your voice again.
Yeah.
It was a rough time for all of us. But you're back, and,
yes,
and I think that's what's important. If we look at the larger picture, it's just a little glitch.
Mm-hmm.
We were right up to the abyss, and here we all are again.
Yeah, still at the abyss.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly my point. I guess I followed the right commercial with that Lucinda Bassett there talking about the depression, and she's got the tapes that are going to cure us. I think we all ought to be dialing that number right now and getting some of those tapes.
Really?
I think it's been a tough time, and I think that one of the things that's been so difficult is, you know, we're driven in such a way that we're trained to jump from one thing to the other. So we jump through this win of an election here that's supposed to be, you know, the salvation here. And what do we find? But these people are still here.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't understand that. I guess I'm wondering mostly about why impeachment isn't even being acted upon right now. Never mind, you know, I don't even care about January. I care right now. And he is, I don't know when this country is going to wake up and understand that this is a dangerous man and a dangerous regime. And in fact, just through my senses alone, I feel that we are in very, very dangerous times. Part of me thinks, and it's something that I have felt and said all along, that until we recognize that this, although this war is being fought with boots on the ground, it is also being fought on a spiritual level. It's deeply spiritual what's happening here. You know, they told us it was about values last time. Look at the values that were expressed this time by the Democrats and by certainly a majority of the people. My problem is I have an added burden in that I come from a state where Lieberman was reelected and even had a standing ovation by Democrats when he was received into office. And it's very difficult to continue watching and observing things like this without letting it get to you. I've gotten to the point I don't want to see one more email from a group. I don't want to see one more cause. I don't want to have anybody else ask me for money. It's that serious, because I'm wondering, why aren't we devoting all of our attention toward impeachment? I don't understand it. It's not the way that I was raised. They look to it as a political issue. Well, let's not talk about that. We'll get everything on the table. We won't discuss that. Ned Lamont was also of that same mind. Not many people knew this, but I was close to the campaign, and I had reservations there. But nevertheless, we got stuck with Lieberman again, and I wonder, where is all of this going to end? And to me, it comes back to the spiritual. We invested, all of us here, almost 6 years, more than 6 years for some of us, to prevent this from happening. And this, I think and feel, tell me I'm wrong. Can you tell me?
No. I have an idea.
Am I as crazy as I think I am, observing these things?
No, I don't think so at all. I think part of the reason, though, that there is no effort toward impeachment is because the power shift in this country has gone to corporate power, and impeachment gets in the way, so they think, of the mechanics of the stock market, the mechanics of capitalism, the mechanics of corporate America. That's why corporate media refuses their responsibility, and the responsibility of media is to afflict the comfortable and to comfort the afflicted.
We need to shut them down and mean it.
Oh, well, sure, but the media have all, with relatively few exceptions, have completely been taken over by corporate America, by the corporations. And as far as why no impeachment, I also believe that the Democrats, it is not in their best interest to impeach. I think, and I hate to say this because I am a Democrat. I think I'm still a Democrat. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm becoming totally apolitical and non-party affiliated.
I think I'm disappearing.
but the Democrats' primary function is to take and control and remain in power. And if they lick their fingers and hold it up to the wind to see which way the wind is blowing and decide that impeachment, the beginnings of impeachment or the process of trying to rid the nation of this sick bastard will somehow cost them an election or an office, then I think they will be inclined to not impeach, because what they are about is power. They are about maintaining.
And there again, Mike, it goes back to power is a spiritual concept.
Well, it's been mightily abused.
Right, exactly. But there's use and abuse.
Well, I hear you. Mary, let me move on. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. All right, call again.
Okay, Mike. You take good care.
All right. Bye-bye now. Stay in touch. Yeah, I essentially agree with her question, or I have the same question, I guess would be a more correct way of putting it. I have the same question. Why no impeachment? Are my rhetorical excesses true? Are Republicans a different breed of human being? Do they lust after death and blood and murder and mayhem? If not, why have Republicans not removed this megalomaniac psychopath from office? You know, Republicans went to Nixon and said, look, the votes are there in the House Judiciary Committee. You're going to be impeached. And when you go on trial, you're going to be convicted. Republicans went to him. And the next day, that sick neo-Nazi resigned. Why not with Bush? What is it? This is the part that is mystifying to me. Mystifying and creepy. You know, Republicans, the Republican Party can get all the power that it wants, just like the Democratic Party. The Republican Party would be, I think at this point, with the enormous majority of Americans that want us the hell out of Iraq and want this criminal regime stopped, Republican power brokers in the Senate and the House could become heroes. I think America would be forever grateful if the Republican leadership would go to Bush and say, we're going to impeach you, we're going to try, we're going to convict you, and we're going to throw you out of office unless you resign tomorrow, resign next week. Get out of here. Why don't they do that? I mean, it's Republican lives that are being put at stake, just as it is Democratic lives. What is going on here? All right, back to your phone calls. Diana is calling from Olympia, Washington. Hey, Diana.
Really excited to be able to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Oh, thanks. Hey, I'm up here in Olympia, and I'm waiting to get you on Seattle or Olympia. I can pick you up in either city. But they said something when I emailed KPOJ today that they're waiting on a satellite or something.
Yes, yes. As soon as the satellite service is available, we're ready. Our flagship station in Phoenix, that is the headquarters of Nova M Radio, we would have this program up today if the satellite service was available. But I don't think it's going to be available until the second week in January now. So
that's okay. We're waiting and we're patient, and we've luckily got the internet. And
yeah,
husband gets home from work and he says, "What's Mike talking about?" Because he's been listening to the car radio, which he can't get you on. But what I wanted to talk about was I was going to talk about the Jim Webb thing with the president's dinner.
Yes.
Did you read about that?
Yes, I did. I mentioned it earlier tonight. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Webb, if I get the story right, Webb was close to decking him.
That's what I read in the Hill, and I don't know if the Hill is a right wing thing, but they have
editorials.
So.
The Hill is kind of libertarian, I think.
Oh, good God.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I was just going to say too, and as an aside, that we live in a kind of a private lake community here, here in Olympia, and we have our own homeowners association. And
Diana, let me interrupt just for a second. Capitol Hill Blue is run by a guy who's libertarian. The Hill is is supposedly just nonpartisan. Okay,
go ahead. Okay, because I've seen the Hill on C-SPAN, so I didn't think they had libertarian stuff on there.
Right.
But my homeowners association, they won't let you have yard signs for campaigns, but in my window up above in my bedroom, one of my bedroom windows, I put a sign that has an American flag, a huge one, and then underneath I put an impeach Bush, and that's been up there for months. And I was thinking of putting a blue sign with the peace sign for Christmas, because peace on earth, you know?
Well, yeah. And now that a homeowners association in Colorado has apologized and the woman kept her wreath up in the shape of a peace sign, maybe you can do the same. Diana, let me leave it there.
We love you, Mike.
Thank you, Diana. We got a break. We'll be back.
Goodbye.
Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the group that made this program possible tonight, an army of one in Phoenix, Ian Huff, associate producer of the program, and handled your phone calls. Thank you, Ian. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall at markmarshall.com, our webmaster, the militant mods at mikemalloy.com, Ben Birch, White Rose Society, archives the program, Catherine Bays, executive producer. Back to your phone calls. Jerky is calling. Jerky, welcome to the program. Haven't heard from you for a while, pal.
Hi, Mike. It's been a long time, and it's great. I've been listening to you on Nova M, and I'm glad that you found such a fine new home.
Well, thank you. Our at-large bureau chief, Jerky.
I have a quote. It's a Latin quote. It's really short. It's fiat justitia ruat coelum, which is from Julius Caesar's father-in-law, and it means, let justice be done though the heavens fall. And your previous caller was wondering why impeachment seems to have been taken off the table and things seems to be at a standstill, and she was kind of seemed to be worrying about. Well, I think there might be a bit of an answer to why in that it's if by holding Bush to account, it means the destruction of America as we know it, which is a possibility.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if the crimes of the Bush administration are as bad as our worst suppositions, which I think we have good reason to believe they probably are, because, well, look at who we're dealing with. The trail of evil leads back far, and as you well know, it can, you know, if you want to follow the trail of evil back far enough, you can go back to, you know, the slave boats and the genocides on the plains, and you don't have to go that far, but you could. And the illusion, well, Noam Chomsky says, you know, the maintenance of necessary illusions.
Right.
Is, you know, I think there's a sense of don't rock the boat. Boy, I'm using a lot of colloquialisms tonight, but
that's okay.
You know what I mean? What, the, if there's the
in other words, impeaching Bush would be impeaching America, and we can't handle it.
Right. Now, I'm not saying that's the case necessarily.
Right.
But there's also the possibility that they're biding their time and waiting until they've assembled a sufficient, you know, waiting until some investigations have gotten underway, waiting until Conyers has become head of the Judiciary Committee, which is going to be so sweet when Conyers is up there. And you remember that jerk who gaveled Conyers down the last session?
Yeah, Sensenbrenner?
Yeah, Sensenbrenner. He turned the lights off, turned off the microphones, and just kind of took his gavel and walked out.
Right.
Well, when now that Conyers is going to be empowered there, and Sensenbrenner is not going to be around.
I think it's Sensenbrenner.
It was Sensenbrenner. It absolutely was. Okay. But I just think we, you know, a little bit of patience might be in order for now. Let some investigations get underway. We've had 6 years of whitewashes and fake investigations and hand-picked committees finding, you know, predetermined outcomes. So maybe there's a chance, because it's all the, a lot of people are worried about all these blue dog Democrats getting in, these conservative Democrats. And I think, but they're not going to be the people at the, in the positions of power. You know, it's based on seniority.
That's right.
So it's the old guard that's going to be coming in. Some of them are good, some of them are bad, but, I don't know. A little bit of patience, I think, is in order. I don't think...
Patience on the part of whom? The American public?
Right. On our part. Just to, let's see how it shakes out. You know, they haven't even really taken their positions yet. Let's wait at least until, you know, late January.
Yeah, I agree with that. I have a tendency to jump nasty just like everyone else is and start screaming about what's Harry Reid doing, what's Nancy Pelosi doing. But you're absolutely right. They're not even in power yet. And I think a bit of patience, even though that seems to be a commodity of which I have none left, none, absolutely, I'm empty. The larder is completely bare. There are cockroaches running around inside there. But that seems to be what is necessary is just to hold on, hold out, and but I'll tell you, Jerky, come January, February, March. With the killing, I don't see how the killing can continue in Iraq, the civilian death. I realize there are 24 million people in that country, and they still have millions and millions and millions to murder. But I don't see how we can continue to tolerate this, we being sentient creatures. How much longer we can operate with the knowledge that hundreds and thousands of people are being slaughtered and that we're right in the middle of it. And the slaughter is occurring because of our turning that country into a non-state, into a failed state. I don't know if, in other words, I guess this is a long way of saying I don't know if we have the patience. I hope we do, because I don't know what the alternative would be.
Oof. Well, yeah, I mean, it's easy. I guess it's easy for me to say, be patient when there's 3,000
people. But that's true. The overarching emotion necessary or tactic necessary is patience. You can't talk patience to someone who has a son or a father or a husband or a daughter in Iraq who may be blown into red mist tomorrow for them to be patient. But Jesus, what this man has done. Jerky, please stay in touch, okay?
Love you, Mike.
All right, take care. Take care. Take care. All right, we'll talk to you again.
Thanks
for participating tonight, however you did that. All right, I'll see you tomorrow night. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.